This is Dr. John DeMartini. This is one of the most amazing and inspiring shows that you can listen into. If you want to be on the edge of your seats, if you want to open up your heart, if you want to expand your mind, and you want to meet incredible people, stay tuned because you're just about to experience a transformative radio show that will change your life. And you're listening to the Dr. Pat Show is coming up right next.
Welcome to the Dr. Pat Show. Talk radio to thrive by. Powerful, inspiring, and coming to you live, bringing you stories of people like you and me, busting through and living life full out. Get ready to dare to wonder what your life would be like if you knew you could not fail.
Goodness, hey everybody, welcome. I want to welcome you to the Dr. Pat Show. This is Talk Radio to Thrive By. I want to say two things as we kick this off, because Dr. T is joining me here today. Dr. Teresa Scar is joining me here today. You're going to hear all about her. Of course, fabulous, fabulous host of an incredible show. But more than that, you know, this is somebody that has dedicated her life, you know, in the field, in the field of social psychology, certified mind-body medicine expert, qualified mindfulness-based reduction instructor. But more than that, we're going to be talking about something that very few people talk about. And this is really the thing we need to talk about now. And, you know, during the show today, aging mindfully, what does that mean? Well, wait, how do you experience grief? What does that mean? So let's just talk about this for a minute, Dr. T, and welcome to the show. Let me just get right there with you on that.
Thanks so much for having me. I'm excited to be here.
All right. Okay. Let's start out with this.
Yeah.
Last Saturday, we put on a party.
Yeah.
From my buddy Howard, my table tennis coach. It was his birthday. So when I think about aging mindfully, I watch him celebrate a birthday and not let the number that he celebrated get in the guy's way. 87. This is my table tennis, one of my table tennis coaches. He's very specifically coaches me on the details and the technique, just small. And I'm telling you, it is very difficult to, first of all, I can't beat him. So let's just put that to the side. But I was thinking about the show with you today. And I looked at Howard last week and mindfully, boy, does that rock. Mindfulness rocks, but it rocks especially with age, doesn't it?
I would say that it helps people approach aging, because again, you're pointing to something. You're saying, despite his number, he was celebrating. And so, you know, we have this idea that, you know, the older that we get, you know, either we're shrinking or we're like denying, and we put a lot of weight on a number. It's just a number. It's our relationship to our time on the planet. It's really doesn't mean anything. I have this idea that people, you know, they either push it away or they're like, you know, they try to do it and they do it in a way where they're saying, I'm still doing this. So we hold this kind of, you know, our adulthood, or, you know, we're successful, we're still riding a bike, we're still coaching, we're still active. And we emphasize this word still. Yeah. And it's like, oh, well, you're only aging well if you can still be like you were. So what happens if you can't be like you were, right? Like if you can't do the same things, if you're struggling in some way, and I'm not saying, you know, I think I might've said this before. I'm not saying like, oh, like aging is just this, you know, sunshine and puppies or whatever I say about it, but there can be real challenges. So for me, aging mindfully or applying mindfulness is saying like, okay, this is what's happening right now. I accept what is happening, but that doesn't mean, oh, I just roll over and I'm like, you know, like, oh, like, I, you know, okay, well, life is, you know, coming for me, or, you know, it's over the hill and we're done. But it's being aware and saying like, oh, okay, so I am not able to do this. What can I still do? What's opening? And mindfulness brings that possibility, right? There's a, rather than just that knee-jerk reaction, there's an opening. You can bring curiosity and say, well, okay, what are my interests at this stage? Am I still the same person that I was? And if I'm not, who am I today? And then having that be possibility versus...
Yeah. This is what I love. I love talking to you about this. Like, I love that expression. Can you do that thing again? And you're just like, wah, wah. I love that. I love it. Look, I'm one of these people that I grew up, and I think I had a really bad childhood experience at my 11th birthday. And so it didn't taint me, but it gave me a different perspective where I said, age is meaningless to me. Whether I celebrate my birthday or not, I want to celebrate life. I'm at 11. And that's what I came to at age 11.
I love that.
Yeah. Yeah. Only because of what happened on my 11th birthday. I'm like, this thing, I didn't use these words, but I will tell you in my mind, I'm like, this is so underrated. So underrated. And what happened on that 11th birthday was, I'm a December baby. I'm December 11th. My mom, I come from not a wealthy family, so you can imagine this story. Everybody, y'all, put this in the context. So my mom, we all go shopping for my birthday, and lo and behold, we end up in the police station because mama got caught shoplifting for my birthday gift. Hello. Oh. But I didn't, I mean, I thought it was kind of cool being at the police office, at police station at age 11 in the Bronx. Hello.
Sure.
But what happened with that? Then we go to do the birthday. This is the first birthday that I've ever celebrated because there was never an experience. My first mom was so sick. It was just horrible. Mm. So my second mom, Mama Doris, she plans this great birthday. Everybody comes over. What do you think happens? The blizzard, the snowstorm in New York, like no other snowstorm. Now, what did that do to me? First of all, my mom made it cool. Right? We made it cool. I got to do things at home. But at that point in my life, I did, I think, say, I am never going to make a thing about this date, this thing that mm-hmm. we do, so much pressure. Mm. And I'm going to celebrate living because that's what she showed us. Now, fast forward to where we are today. My friends can't stand this.
Why?
Because I don't want to celebrate my birthday. And it's not that I don't want to celebrate my birthday. I don't want black balloons. I know that. So what is the grieving process that accompanies people? Let's just call it in aging, just for the moment. I don't care if you're 21, 30, 90, but there are some parts of us, if we don't know another way, we grieve that which we thought we had, we don't have anymore, or that which we think we're never going to get to see.
Yeah. Okay. So that tees it up perfectly because there is, I think, this unacknowledged thing that I'm saying, like, I think we're grieving and I think we aren't talking about it. Cause first of all, we shove grieving aside anyway. So, you know, like we could talk death and dying and people are like, oh no, let's not. And so, but this grieving process with our containers that we're in, or the things that are happening in our lives that didn't look like we thought they would look, or, you know, time's running out in not being able to do the things that you thought or hoped that you would. And I think that the important piece there is to pause and then say, like, oh, ouch, like this hurts or this is hard. And then offering that self-compassion to your experience, first of all. And it's not saying like, oh, fa-la-la, you know, like I can, you know, do these things. I think that we're skipping over that. And then that's where we get kind of in this insidious, like internalized ageism path where we're not necessarily acknowledging that. And where this started is that I was in Reno, Nevada, and I was in grad school, and I was in grad school at an older age. And so, and I was working for, well, you're very familiar with this. I was working for the Sanford Center for Aging. And that's the reason I wanted to go to Nevada and to go to school at UNR at the University of Nevada, Reno, was to work at the Sanford Center for Aging. I've always had a heart for that. I've worked in and around aging since I was 19. So we have decades, you know, behind me personally and professionally with aging and seeing how people do this. I taught undergraduates gerontology. So I taught them about aging. And our moniker was everybody is aging. And we are. Everybody is aging. And when the 21-year-olds, they'd be like, nah, you know, like, what are you talking about? And the exciting part was that, you know, through the semester, they're like, I learned how to talk to my grandparents easier, or I acknowledge that, you know, I see my friends who are in their 20s. You mentioned it doesn't matter what age you are, who are struggling with aging and doing this over the hill kind of talk. And so once we start recognizing and seeing that, then we can say like, oh yeah, like these parts are hard, or it is sad. I'll just give a personal example. I am, 53, and alcohol doesn't agree with me anymore. And weirdly enough, I am sad. Like I'm like, cause in my head, I see a dive bar and I'm like, yes, let's go. No, my body's like, no, we cannot go. And there's a grief with that. And that's a minor thing. People are given many bigger challenges than, oh, I can't drink anymore. But there is that identity, right? There's an identity of, or a habit pattern of, oh, this is how I celebrate, or this was a bad day. And so then you gravitate and go for that. And, you know, my body's saying, no, thank you.
Listen, I am in 1990, actually it started in 89, but I relapsed. Just saying, people, I'm human. But I was faced with that situation for a lot of reasons. And I had to go down the pathway. And boy, let's talk about this for a minute, because it's not small. Mm. When you make that decision, when your body, in my case, my body, my mind, everything, mostly nothing was going to work. But there is grieving. And you know what? Mm. We don't talk about this enough. For people, that's why we're starting an addiction channel, because we don't talk about this enough, Dr. T. We don't talk about grief enough when we go through life changes. Yeah. And that particular thing you mentioned, you're not just grieving over not being able to take a drink or not wanting to take a drink. My entire life focused around alcohol. I was so disappointed, Dr. T, when Linda and I went to Disney World and they did not have alcohol. Who does that, Disney? But I'm just saying, it is a change where everything in your life changes. Mm-hmm. But let's talk about what you've learned. And thank you for sharing your study. Thank you for talking about why this is important to you. Because there's one thing I want you to really comment on. There's the idea of aging, and there's the idea of getting old, and they are not the same. Mm-hmm. And I think we need to change some things up. The latest study I read, tell me if this is true. I don't know. I don't know what's true on the internet anymore.
Sure.
It said older adults experience grief at a higher rate than younger adults. Now, some genius came up with that. Some study came up with that. Does that even make sense to you?
Well, so there's
Let's have a chit chat about it. Let's just
chit-chat.
You and me be opinionated.
All right. Well, my dissertation is actually looking at grief in older adults. So I did spend a lot of time with the research, and there are more occasions to experience grief, loss of partners, loss of friends, loss of family members. So like in the death realm, and then also in the physical, like your own physical being. But what is happening is usually what it shows is that people who are older have more resilience, right? So they're not maybe expressing it, because it's not that first hit of like loss. or, you know, loss in your life. And you know, people go, oh, I mean, we learn there's impermanence, right? It's like, well, I feel these things and maybe this grief, it never goes away, but you know, you learn to live with it and your life grows around that grief. There's a beautiful image of that. So we, you know, that first hit of grief, it's like shocking. Or if there's been years in between, it's like, oh, I forgot like how powerful this experience is. So I would say, yes, I would agree that people are probably experiencing more grief, but how are they relating to it? Or how is it impacting them?
What is your sense of that? Can you talk to that a little bit? Because this is your area of expertise. And I think it's so interesting. I wasn't kidding when I started the show and said, I want to be like Howard when I grow up. But I'll tell you what I'm also noticing that's influenced me quite a bit. And I think it annoys Linda now, who is staying with me. We watch a little bit of TV. We don't really have a lot. And oh my gosh, I am not affiliated with this channel, but I must say this for Linda, the Hallmark Channel. I immediately know that when the TV goes on, go to channel 702, the Hallmark Channel, right? For me, I want to see Brad Pitt in World War Z for the 20th time. But we're going to go. But what I'm noticing is the commercials are different. Mm. And so what I'm noticing is I don't know what's happening, but I've never seen more advertisements for people that are aging, and not aging, but the range where the commercials are telling you there's something wrong with you. Mm. And even if there's nothing wrong with you, you need to go get this injection just to make sure you don't get that something wrong with you. But very few are uplifting people. Mm-hmm. How much of that societal messaging? Now, we know about advertising. We understand the subliminal messaging, but it isn't just that anymore. It's pop-up ads. It's how much of that do we allow to enter in and negate any form of mindfulness we may have to be like a Howard?
Yes. Well, you've brought up many things. So first of all, the anti-aging is I think the last stat I saw was like a $65 billion industry worldwide.
Yeah.
And so, and you know, yes, of, you know, because a lot, you know, the world is aging, right? So our society is aging. And yet we're given these message that aging is bad, youth is good, you know, do everything you can to, you know, protect and, you know, look as youthful as possible and, you know, eradicate this and eradicate that at the cost of this and that. So we are getting messages, right, that tell us like, oh, well, don't do that. You're not desirable. You're not viable as a human. You know, we want to shove you aside. But if you do these things, then maybe you won't. When I first moved to Nevada, it's much drier than Minnesota. And so I went to one, you know, like a Sephora or somewhere, I don't know where I was. And so I said, oh, my skin is really dry. And they looked at me. And so they brought me over and they pulled out this container and it was called Hope in a Jar. I didn't know you could buy Hope. First of all, I didn't know you could jar it. But this cream was Hope in a Jar. And I thought, what is happening? Like, my skin just feels dry. I don't know what's happening. And so when I think about that, and I had students who, again, were in their 20s and they were being, you know, they were being told like, prevent now so that you don't have this. So then we have this like, don't go to there. Well, what if you go to there? And then all of a sudden you've been told for decades that this is terrible and awful, a wrinkle of this or of that. And we're not, and I will say this, people who choose to support their mental and physical health by having, you know, quote unquote work done, I fully support that. But I want people to understand what it is. Are they doing it for them, or are they doing it because there's some weird pressure or some weird like idea that they should be a different way? So I love that
you did that. Thank you. Because doing, how did you phrase it? Doing work on ourselves. Yeah. Mm-hmm. That is as ancient. That thing right there, they didn't call it doing work on themselves. But the idea of transforming this, everything from mouth plates, ear plates, head plates, these were rituals.
Yeah.
When you look at the Egyptians and some of the Egyptians' portrayal, and when you look at the archetype that, that Egypt portrays, right? I don't think I've ever seen any kind of glyph or graphic of a pharaoh or Nefertiti. Either these people either died young or they had a mindset about how they were portrayed. You see what I'm saying? Mm-hmm. And I think this, of course, they had at their fingertips the most delicious oils. And we don't even want to go there. But we want to shame people.
Yeah. Yeah. No.
Yeah. Because I'm telling you right now, if I was not allergic to tattoo ink, you would not be able to see my skin right now. I'm just saying at the moment, because I, something about the innate ability of that, the real primitive ability hit me as a young kid. Mm. Of course, I don't have, my body does not like that. So I designed them. But why in our society, and I know the answer, but why are we so quick to believe some stranger, some ad? Mm. Why are we so quick to believe it? Are we looking for that jar of hope? Are we still looking for the fountain of youth? Mm. Or have we limited ourselves to believe that our longevity is a number that somebody told us and we program ourselves to terminate because of it?
Well, as always, multi-part. I wish I could dive down every avenue and door you opened there. So first of all, I've seen in my own life and seen, you know, throughout my studies, our relationship with our containers start, you know, in an awareness, probably what, 10, 12 years old, you know, there's children who are having disordered eating and eating disorders and all of those things because we're told that our body should look a certain way. So we're getting that messaging, right? Then we start going like, oh, well, do everything to not have this happen. And so we've built in this kind of external feedback loop where we're like trying to fit into what someone is saying that we should be. That's why I say, I don't want to demonize anything. Like, you know, people can do whatever they want as long as it's to make them feel better. Right. But not, an informed better, yeah. Right? Like I'm doing this because I want to honor my container. I want to honor my experience. And I'm doing this out of love for my body, not rejection, hate, and pushing away. And so I think that there's a really fine line and distinction with that, so that we can say, I am embracing who I am as a person. And that starts like so young, like, you know, making friends with your body and making friends and having this relationship where I have, you know, I have needs and I can ask for those needs to get met and I can meet my own needs because I'm not, you know, whatever judgment. And so that I would say is one of the things of how we're so susceptible for it, because it starts so early. I mean,
Oh my God. I love this. Okay. So let's talk about body image. Aging and grief. We're going to take a short break, but I want to talk about this for a minute because I grew up with serious body image issues, and there are a lot of reasons. I was abused as a child, and so there were a lot of reasons for it. But if that's you, beware. Hold on to this before break. If that's you, beware of making friends with people that live in Hawaii. When we come back from break, I'm going to tell you why. Beware. If you have body image issues, beware of this, because I guarantee you by the time you spend time in Hawaii, they will be gone. Let's take a short break. We'll be right back.
I'm Dr. Diane, host of Find Your Fabulous. It's time to ignite your full power. Join me every first and third Monday at 8 a.m. Pacific Time. Connect with other bold, courageous, and powerful women who are ready to stop playing small. I've got the information, inspiration, and revelation to ignite your personal power and unleash the wise goddess within. For more information, visit oldpowerwomen.com.
Do you lack balance in your life? You don't have to settle for the life that you're currently living. Jennifer Hazard, who is a life and career coach and motivational speaker, can help you navigate this wild world and unlock your full potential while elevating your aspirations. Let Jennifer be the catalyst for your journey towards excellence. Follow her on her social media and her YouTube channel. For more information, you can visit her at www.jenniferhazard.com.
Welcome back, my very special guest, Dr. T. Before we keep going here, and I want to explain, don't email me because I'm going to tell you the greatest gift I've ever gotten was building community with the people in the great islands of Hawaii. But before we do that, how do people find out about you? How do they find out about working with you? How do they find out about your show? All of the above.
Well, there's information about my show on Transformation Talk Radio. My show is called Creating Connection with Dr. T. So you can get recordings on Spotify and iTunes as well. So You just look up Creating Connection with Dr. T. My website is ccwithdrt.com. So that's Creating Connection with Dr. T, but the initials. So ccwithdrt.com. And there's lots of different ways to work with me. And you'll find a contact form and you can link right to my calendar and we can chat and talk about what you're working on and how I can support you.
Now, I want to tell you about my comment before the break. And please. I really mean it because I grew up really not feeling good about my body for a lot of reasons. And, you know, you don't understand why when you're younger. I mean, it's great for us to be able to sit here and especially me now knowing what I know about mindfulness. And especially aging mindfulness, but also, you know, body image mindfulness. And so the best thing that ever happened to me was spending so much time on the beautiful islands of Hawaii and meeting so many people, you know, people that were part of the land. You know, one of my friends was a Kamehameha Hawaiian language teacher. But what I learned is how confident people are in who they are. Now, the people of the island, the indigenous people, suffer greatly, still do to this day in so many ways. But it doesn't affect how they feel about themselves. No size. You don't be this size. You don't be that size. When I first went, I was shocked at the joking they do with each other about race. And I mean, I really was. And I came from a diversity organization and I'm like, oh no. But what I meant by that is even me, it took me a while. But after a bit, when you're the only one fully dressed, jumping in the hot spring, you start to think, maybe I'm missing something here.
Yeah.
And I'm grateful for my friends in the community there for embracing me and helping me get past that. Because the minute that you can get past something like that and people are there supporting you, and let's go to your what you talk about. Let's go to those connections. If you can do that, have that experience, then mindfully aging or aging mindfully takes on new meaning. And this is important. I don't think, Dr. T, and I want you to comment on this, I don't think it's a mystery why in today's world we are seeing people that are aging being depressed. Now, why do I say that? What did my grandmas have? What did grandmama, all the grandmamas, and then my stepmama's mama, what did they have that adults now that are aging don't have? You see, the world has changed. My grandmama was happy. She was a jokester. She would play the most ridiculous jokes on my grandfather. The woman was happy. I never saw her stressed. She did not have high blood pressure, but something has changed in our society. Can you tell us what that is to create now this conversation about grief and aging?
Yeah, I think communities looked different. Now we're kind of spread out all around the world and we do have technology so we can communicate in different ways, but meaning and purpose, right? So I'm guessing that with your grandparents, there was some meaning and purpose that was being fulfilled, whether it was engaging in the community or supporting family, mm-hmm. that we don't have. And some of my students didn't even know their grandparents because they either lived so far away or there was a language barrier. So we don't have that. We don't have a lot of natural intergenerational interaction, right? So that there's that getting to know people across generations, which, you know, gives meaning in so many ways. And, you know, at UNR, we would but our students would work with, you know, members in the community and, you know, write memoirs and tell stories. And they created these beautiful relationships. And they would always be like, oh, we have so much more in common than we have differences. So I would say there's difference in community in that way. We have many times, if families are, they might be two income families, so there's not people at home. I know that, you know, my grandma, you know, she would hang the wash and have conversations over the fence with her neighbors. People were home in a different way and doing different things. You know, they, you know, I mean, she would get out her, my grandma would get out her frustrations by making bread on Friday. So she'd punch it out, you know, for the week, and then she'd go on a bowling date with my grandpa, you know, so there's, I think, and I saw a comedian just recently talk about, it stuck with me, that there was built-in mindfulness before we had technology in our pockets. You know, we can distract and numb and engage here, you know, getting kind of that tunnel vision. Whereas, you know, before maybe you're looking around and you're like, oh, you know, I'm going to mindfully make bread and get my frustrations out. I don't know. So that's my long-winded answer.
No, it's a great answer because I think you're pointing out three things. One is there is a separation now between parents, grandparents, and children. Mm-hmm. It's just the way we are right now. It's the way our culture, society has evolved. You know, once upon a time, if you lived like my family, they lived in a part of the Bronx. And boy, we all lived there. We all lived in the Bronx until one of them moved to Jersey. Yeah. And then the second one moved to Jersey. And then the third one moved to Jersey. Then we moved to Jersey, right? But we didn't go from the Bronx to California. Mm-hmm. And the siblings had a different understanding of what their role was in the family. And technology did change it. Mm-hmm. Not just technology for technology's sake, but the opportunities for careers. Yeah. You see, it isn't just technology. It's technology and what opportunities mm-hmm. were created that didn't exist for my parents. We went from a manufacturing industry where, okay, if you were going to, you live by the factory. Hello. Right?
Yeah, yeah.
You know, you live by, you work at AT&T, you live in Jersey. But that changed now. And so there are more opportunities for family members to say, sorry, grandmama, I'm going to move to San Francisco. Mm-hmm. And with that, though, have we lost our ability to understand the importance of connecting with family? You see, I work with a young group of people, and they each have to have projects. And one of them was complaining. I'm just not going to talk about it very much, but they're just complaining about how old somebody got. Let me just put it there. So I gave them a project, and I said, you think they're old? How do you think it feels? So the project was, each of y'all has to go reach out to a community here where there are people that you think are old. Mm-hmm. And you're going to set up a schedule. You're going to visit them every week. Now, that was met with a bit of resistance. However, today, the bonding. I mean, I created a little bit of a monster because I'm navigating the emotional part of this now that I didn't expect. What does that mean, Dr. T? See, when you connect with people at that level, whether it's young, age gap or not, you build a bond and a relationship. And these young people are learning about stories they've never heard before. I don't know if you can do that around the world, but I want to get back to something you said. When we lose that level of emotional connection, we do grieve. We grieve that.
Yeah, even if it's out of our awareness, right? Because we might never feel alone because, again, we can dive into online and groups and communities, but there is that interconnection that can be missed. And I don't think it's just family because I have more chosen family than I have, you know, real biological family that I want to interact with. So, you know, but I think again that it is important to see, like, am I just in a tunnel? And that could be for all ages. I know a lot of people who snowbird and then they go to these 55 plus communities and they're isolated, right? So they're in their age gap and, you know, they're not then it's like, oh, the young people, because ageism works both ways, right? So then there's like this, like, oh, you know, young people, they don't know anything, blah, blah, blah. And so there's isolating, whether it's by choice or by, you know, fact of like work or something like that, you're not then able to understand, like, hey, we're people and maybe we have more in common, or maybe you do have something to offer to me as a young person or as an older person. And how do we do that as people, right? Like, it's not just this, you know, like when we say they are like this, or they are like this, then communication shuts down. And it is, there's a book, Becca Levy, she has, it's called The Age Bias. And she talks about, you know, culturally that it is different, like how we societal messages about aging and what that does to us. So she has great research in there. I don't know it all off the top of my head, but I do think that there is something in that getting to, anytime we get up close and personal to anyone that's different from us, we understand, you know, like and that's across the board. That's race, that's gender, that's preference, that's all of the things. So how do we get close to people? And so when we do that with aging, when we start pushing it away in our 20s, 30s, and 40s, and you're over the hill, then we want to, like, we don't want to associate. It's just going to rub off on us. And, you know, like, I don't want that, you know? And really what you go is like, oh, okay, it's a privilege to age. And how can I do that with a little more ease or curiosity? I think bringing curiosity to the party is the most important thing.
I think that's true. And, you know, that's what I'm watching when I'm watching the interaction between, you know, the different groups of people. Mm-hmm. But I love the curiosity. And part of this is, I want you to talk about mindfully, because we've mentioned it a couple of times, but I also want folks to understand this and understand what you're talking about when you talk about aging mindfully, because that, I think, is the key to showing up. And I'm telling you, if you saw Howard, there is nothing about that number that you would get from that. There's just nothing about it. It's a spirit thing. But talk about what you mean by aging mindfully, because, you see, I think this is the key. And I'm not just talking about if you're 80 years old. I mean, if you're 22 years old, this is for you too, right?
Yeah. Yeah. And it's like, the more I talk to people and people are so generous in sharing their stories, they're like, oh no, this is at any age. And so, you know, when I think about age, you know, it's bringing in mindfulness, it's bringing awareness, curiosity, and exploration. And what I mean by, you know, all of those things. It's like awareness, like, oh yes, my knee hurts. And Ashton Applewhite has a great TED talk where she talks about her knee hurting and she was complaining about it being about age. And then she's like, oh wait, my other knee doesn't hurt. And it's also 64 years older, however old she was when she was doing the talk. And so it's being aware of like, okay, yes, I'm having this experience, and then broadening the lens to get curious about like, okay, is this impacting everything? Is, you know, like people who live with chronic pain, they'll be like, everything hurts. And it's like, well, does everything hurt? And then you get curious and maybe the tip of your pinky does not hurt in that moment. And then you can start opening from there. And then you can explore, you know, what is actually happening. And I think those are pieces to that.
I love that you brought that up because, you know, look, until I got two new knees, thank you, technology, I couldn't hardly walk. Mm. And so the perception was blah, blah, blah. Oh, you just get no. And, you know, I stopped someone one day because I had an epiphany. You ever have an epiphany? Mm. Like somebody says something to you and you're like, enough.
Yeah.
And I said, really? That's your best shot? I said, no. I played professional softball, fast pitch, slow pitch. I blew out my knee at age 19. Technology wasn't there to fix it. Mm-hmm. I have been an athlete. I play pretty tough sports. I've been training. And so how did I get here? Is it age or is it just being super active and waiting for technology to come up and fix it? Because yeah, it's like, no, it's not age. It's, you know, me being like so hard on my body. Mm. And now that technology has caught up, I can replace almost all the parts that used to hurt. Mm. And it's fascinating because now with new knees, nobody mentions it. Nobody talks about it. Nobody comments on it. There isn't anything that goes on about it. I don't limp anymore. Mm-hmm. And, you know, I have a cousin over in Italy, and I have cousins in Italy and South America, but there's a couple of tells these stories about how he approached one of our papas, you know, a senior papa, their papas, and carried a cane, walks with a cane, pop-up walks with a cane. And so he brought his friend over and they're there with pop-up and walking, and the friend from America makes a comment about the cane for papa. Mm. Now, Papa knows enough English to know when you're making a comment about the cane. And the end result was, Papa went off on a rant. And he explained to this person that he has carried this cane since he was 17.
Mm.
And he told the story of why. But you see, nobody has ever seen Papa without the cane. Ever. Ever.
Yeah.
But this person commented about the cane and his age.
Mm-hmm.
We do that.
Yeah.
We do that. And part of that hurts another person. And mm-hmm. we need to also be mindfully about who we are when we're around people. I don't care if they're 21, 22, or aging. And I went through this with Jessica. You know, Jessica joined me right out of school. Mm-hmm. And I gave her a lot of responsibility. I do that with our producers now. I don't care how old they are. A lot of responsibility. And I watched what would happen when we'd go out to events and this beautiful young woman would be at this event and I would defer to her.
Mm-hmm.
Or I would get on a call. Or Jessica would get on a sales call and they'd take one look at her and just not take her seriously. And as a business owner and somebody that is aware of this, that there's no room in our society to judge people based on a number. And we're doing it, aren't we? Oh, it doesn't matter yeah. if you're old or you're young. If you're young, yeah, too young to be smart enough to know anything. if you're old, you're old enough that you don't remember what you learned. And so we have to just stop this, don't we?
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, that's why I'm passionate about changing the narrative about how we talk about this or how we approach it, so that we're not getting trapped in these, you know, kind of habit loops of either dismissing or, you know, thinking a certain way is a better way, right? Like that we were like, oh no, you're too young, you're not this way, and then what happens the other way? I was out with my friend Virginia, who's now 97, but at the time she was in her 80s. And I noticed how people were talking, like we were at a restaurant. The server is looking at me going, what would she like? And I'm like, I don't know, ask her. And then, you know, when we were at the bank, you know, the woman used what is called elder speak. And elder speak is that sing-songy, like, oh dear, how are you today? And she was like, oh, what are we doing today? And I was like, oh my God. And so like, I kept seeing these examples throughout the day as I'm going through the day with Virginia. I did share it with her, which then shattered the glass. And so then she saw it all the time. And she was like, oh, and I was out with my daughter-in-law and they were talking to her. And we make, as you said, we make assumptions, like with the pop-up, like carrying a cane, thinking that's age-related. We look at someone who might have different colored hair and glasses and appear a certain age. And then we talk louder because we think you're hard of hearing. And, you know, it's like, we're, you know, we assume so much. And it's one of the only areas that we still allow it to be a source of poking fun. Look at any card aisle at, you know, any birthday card aisle, and it's, you know, making fun of aging. And there's something to be said with, yeah, keeping a sense of humor about maybe some of the things that are happening. But when we're doing it to a point where then we're making assumptions on how people are, and then dismissing them, whether it's young or old, then we really limit what's possible.
Yeah. Okay. I got to bring this up. I am fascinated with certain women in Hollywood that have taken on incredible producing roles. Mm. I mean, powerhouse. The dynamic duo of Reese Witherspoon and Jennifer Aniston and what they've done with The Morning Show, it's just crazy. But here's what I've noticed. I have to mention Barbie.
Mm.
Barbie snubbed at the Oscars. Whatever you believe, this is not the point that I'm making. But I want to talk about Margot Robbie for a minute. This woman is amazing. Mm. Kind of going through what Taylor Swift went through. This woman is a high-powered, genius producer, out of the field, out of the gate, challenged the traditional in Hollywood and got behind and literally with her and the director brought Barbie to the screen. Now, what's the problem with that? She played Barbie. So what you start to watch, if you watch it, I don't do it anymore, but how they look at Margot Robbie and Bobby and Barbie as the same person. And I remember watching a post, the stream of posts, and I went out there and what I did is I got a picture of Harley Quinn, of Suicide Squad.
Yes.
Margot Robbie.
Love her role there.
And I have to tell you, people were shocked that that was Margot Robbie. They were shocked that, I was like, who do you think is playing her? I mean, they were like debating that that wasn't her. And I'm like, oh, wait a minute. But you see what we do. It's so easy to now associate somebody that is so not like Barbie in the stereotypical way. Mm-hmm. Of course, nothing was about stereotype in that movie. But now we take exactly what you said, a behavior, and we overlay it on a person. Mm-hmm. And boy, that's what gets us in trouble, doesn't it?
Yes. And the judgments and the, it's wild. It's wild.
Look, I want to ask you this in the time we have left. We have to do something here. We do. We have to be able to start the narrative, but also there has to be action that people listening today can not just be more mindful, but become an advocate for changing the narrative. And I think that's what's important. for me, it was a couple of social media posts where I was like, please, Barbie and Margot are not, that's like a movie character, right?
Yes.
I mean, not, you know that?
This is not the person.
It's like Kevin Costner in Yellowstone. It's like people, that's an acting role he has. He doesn't walk around with a gun. I don't think so. But we do that to each other because you see, this is where we are. There's so much media. What is the action? Give us an action plan.
Okay. So for me, all roads lead to mindfulness, and mindfulness for, you know, the definition that I like is paying attention on purpose, non-judgmentally. So something comes up, your knee hurts, your back hurts. Notice what the first thought is. Notice like, oh, I'm old. And then go, oh, okay. My first thought was I'm old. How can I be curious about that? What does old mean? And you just start, you know, kind of chipping away at this big narrative, and you start hearing it and you start seeing it, and you start noticing like, oh, I do talk bad about aging, or, oh, this is what I attribute to being old, or, you know, or maybe it's, I don't know anyone who's older than me or younger than me. Maybe it's like you gave the assignment, go have a conversation with someone who's in a different age group. And what is that like? You know, what does it mean to go across there? And I know that, you know, sometimes it can feel like, oh, you know, maybe they, you know, maybe they're not going to hear me, maybe this. Same thing with language barriers, right? You know, but how do we do that? We do that by slowing down, by paying attention and being present with the person. I don't know where my phone is, but you're not going to get that if you're like over here and you're here. I'm not going to be able to connect with you. Yeah. So how can I connect with my own experience non-judgmentally with some compassion and maybe curiosity? And then how can I connect with mm-hmm. those around me and notice when it goes to that quick dismissive? And then just pausing. Don't judge the judging. Then that's next level. Yeah. Don't judge the judging. But then go like, oh, I notice that I dismissed this person because they were young or they were older. They look different from me. And then go like, oh, that's interesting. That's one of my favorite phrases. That's interesting. And then pause and say, that's interesting. And then see what bubbles up from there.
I love it. And I want to just say one thing. I love that you did the cell phone thing. We have a guideline here, especially in our production room. And I think Linda wants me to put a sign on the production room, like the cell phone sign with the red circle.
Oh, yeah.
And I get asked a lot, especially by my friends, why don't you all want cell phones in a production room? And are you worried that people aren't doing their jobs? I said, no, that's not it at all. We're building a network that's based on connecting. And it's important for our producers to really study their hosts. I gave them an assignment that for each of them, I want to know 3 to 4 things they can recommend that is done better. Mm. Now, why is that difficult to do if you're distracted? It's actually impossible. Mm. You see, the idea of multitasking is an illusion.
Right. Research says that we can unitask. Yeah. We can't multitask.
Driving down the phone, let me look out the window. So I'm not concerned about people that work here not doing their job. We have a fantastic team. Mm. But I also know, and I've learned enough about this, that in order to be of great service, it has to be a singularity of focus. And they call me old school. I don't know. Am I?
I get old school. I don't know. I mean, I think
I hate the term.
There's a power in presence, and there's a gift that you give to people when you are fully present, right? Like when you give someone your full attention, that is like that. It feels good. And there's, and I can't remember the researcher, but they've done fMRI studies where if people are paying attention, it lights up certain parts of our brain and it feels good. And it doesn't feel good when someone is like, oh yeah, no, I'm here. And then you're like, well, no, clearly you're not, you know, like, and so making that eye contact and being present. And so, and not jumping ahead of going like, oh, I'm going to say this. I'm going to say, like, I had no idea where this conversation was going to go. And what a delight, you know, because we've just been present and allowing. So thank you.
I love it. I want to thank you, first of all, for everything. Thank you for today. I know we've left people with a lot to think about. please don't understand what I'm saying about the people in the great islands of Hawaii. They are amazing. I have learned more about my own sense of spirituality, my own personal growth, the time that I spend there. I can't even explain how powerful the lessons have been for me, as well as my friends from the Bronx. I want to thank you for today. Please, what's your personal message? And please tell folks how they can connect with you.
Connect with me at ccwithdrt.com and come listen to my show. I'm on the first and third Wednesdays of every month from 10 a.m. Pacific to 11 a.m. Pacific, so an hour show. And then that's 12 Central and 1 Eastern. And you can join me live or, again, find the recordings. And my personal message is be kind to yourself and be curious.
Thank you, Dr. T. I'm Dr. Pat. And please, I hope that you heard something today that will shift you. Maybe the next time you say to somebody, hey, that's old school, you'll really pull back and not think that for a minute. Or maybe about yourself that says, I'm really too young to dot, dot, dot. Whatever it is, it's a word. Mm-hmm. But if you have a mindset, and the mindset is on the possibilities of life and celebrating life, watch what happens when you have that singularity of focus. As Dr. T said, watch what happens. Watch what lights up in you. Dr. T, thank you so much for today.
Thank you, Dr. Pat.
Thank you, Sierra, for pushing all the right buttons. And thanks to all of you for getting us to talk about stuff that people just ain't talking about enough. Woo-hoo. We'll see you next time.
Right. Thank you.